OTB Sports Golf Weekly with Now TV. Stream live football action with a Now TV Sky Sports Pass. Your sport on your terms.
Have you seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Suck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course I would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course I want to play at the weekend.
Well, hello there. It's another week. It's another Golf Weekly. Peter Lawrie and I abandoned last week, but Peter, it's good to see you again.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Very well, my friend. We were joined by Gary Murphy. Excellent. Great feedback. We will chat to Gary again soon. But this week, we are honoured by the presence once again of Nathan Murphy. Hello, Nathan.
Why would you want that level of expertise, Joe, when we can just shite on for the next half an hour?
My thoughts exactly. And he was golfing himself this very time last week, but Fionn Davenport, you're with us now. Hello.
Indeed, Joe. How are you? I should apologize for not being Gary Murphy because, as Nathan said, I don't have his level of expertise, experience, or indeed that kind of sang-froid on air. He's terrific. I know him. That's what I'm saying.
He is terrific. He was very good. We are here with thanks to Now TV. You can stream Premier League, Serie A, EFL, and in a couple of weeks, the Masters, your sport, your way. As a quick aside, I saw some shots of Augusta recently. I don't know why it hadn't occurred to me, but a lot of the leaves are turning red. I had just somehow presumed in my imagination that Augusta was green all year round. It is most certainly not. Leaves are turning red. And I'd also just presumed it was predominantly evergreen trees, but lots of the trees have lost their leaves. So it really is going to be such a different Masters that we're going to watch. It whetted the appetite all the same. It kind of feels like...
I thought, Joe, you were leading up to the story that was out over the last few days, that those at Augusta National are aware of your concerns, Joe, about the lack of greenery and the lack of leaves on trees. So in best Augusta National spirit, what do you think they've done, Joe?
Fake trees.
They've bought themselves in a load of trees to add some colour to the place.
Wow.
There you go, lads. It just goes to show you what money can do.
It's a fantasy land, isn't it? Everything is possible in Augusta.
It's also why fundamentally the Open Championship is a better tournament.
Oof.
Yeah. I mean,
you'll never commentate in Augusta now. You and Gary McCord.
Listen, also as well as like it's called what little there is. It's not the first cut. It's rough. Okay, Augusta, it's rough. Just call it that. It's not the first cut. They're not patrons. They're fans. Stop it.
Nathan and I would like to say on the record.
I would like to praise those at Augusta National for the openness they've shown throughout the years to welcoming all types of people to that great, great club, Joe.
Yes, a rich history.
Send me, I am much appreciative of.
Yeah.
What was it McCord said? Oh, the green was so fast it was like someone giving it a Brazilian. Can you imagine the silence?
Yeah.
Oh, it's such a great line. I don't agree with you. We had this debate before. I love the Open Championship, and maybe it's a better golf tournament. But Augusta is unmissable. Like, you can plan your weekend already. I've been looking at what else is on, and it is a busy weekend because there's so much going on in sport right now. But I'm thinking, oh, dear God, yes. I'm just going to sit there. This is what it's all about. There's nothing to do. There's nowhere to go. And this is going to be one of the highlights of the next 2 months. That weekend is going to be probably the highlight.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Is there going to be hoodies allowed at Augusta?
Oh, yeah. Well, if Tyrrell Hatton has his way, yeah. No, but it does. It has the two main advantages it has is one, it's an absolutely gorgeous looking golf course. And two, it's the one major played in the exact same place every year. So you develop familiarity. So every April when you sit down to watch it, it's the same holes. You've spent years familiarizing. And these are massive things. But ultimately, long-time listeners to the pod know that this debate goes back 12 years. We've been having the same argument. Listen, I love Augusta, or I love watching the Masters, but I prefer the Open. That's it.
It does have a magic about it, Augusta. And it does. That course does seem to just produce brilliant finales. There is something about all the water, the danger, and the opportunity. It's just magic. I heard Jordan Spieth, actually, he was interviewed recently by Colt Nost, and he was saying he has this great tradition. See, it's the tradition as well, all that stuff. The champion's dinner. I don't know why, but I just like the champion's dinner and all that stuff and all the folklore. So Jordan Spieth, when he goes back on the Tuesday, him and Michael Greller, they go at the back to the champion's deck. There's obviously a champion's deck. And they have a whiskey together. Mm. I just think that's the dream. If I could win one tournament in my life, it would be that. Oh, my God.
And until the 80s, journalists, like the ones that got the good accreditation, they were allowed hang about the champion's deck. And you, so for example, if you read any book about golf in the 60s or 70s, you've got great stories, the likes of Bamberger and others, chatting away to golfers on that golfer's deck and getting the insights. And it really was, but that's all gone. They haven't done that for many a year now, which is a shame.
How different is it going to be? We should have looked into this in advance, maybe. So, like, is the champion's dinner going to happen? Is it really the wisest thing to be putting all the old lads into a room with all the young lads for a couple of hours to eat whatever Tiger is serving up? And like, is the par three challenge going to happen? I can't imagine all the kids are going to be running around the place.
Yeah,
there's no fans, is there? There's going to be no spectators at all.
There never has been. And there'll be no patrons this year either, Peter.
Patrons, yeah. I tell you a good story, actually. There was two caddies that used to caddy on the European Tour. Both of them were brothers from Canada. I used to call them the Koala Brothers. If anybody kids program, these Koala Brothers were actually Australian, but they used to fly around this plane together. But the two Duncans, as they were called, they used to go on a camper van. But one of the brothers, he wouldn't wear shoes. He'd only wear sandals. In any kind of weather, that's all he wore. And he wore it on the golf course. But when his player got to Augusta, he was told that he wasn't allowed to wear sandals. He had to wear runners or something other than sandals. And he said, you know what? I ain't caddying. So he didn't caddy in Augusta. It was his first time his player or him got to Augusta National. So there you go.
Well, that's just a bit silly. Why was he so averse to wearing shoes?
Just that was his nature.
That's not really an explanation.
But that's what it was. He refused
that's
to wear
a weird shoes. Hill. It's a weird hill to die on.
Yeah.
Just like
it certainly is.
Shoes. Yep. Shoes. I'll be the one.
Man. Oh, dear. Yeah.
Not doing it.
So the
but imagine getting all the way there, and just because you had to put on a pair of shoes, you wouldn't.
The sort of thing you'd do.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, stubborn streak to say the least. In fact, someone said to me just the other day that they enjoy tuning into the pod just to see what bridge Peter Lawrie will burn this week. Which
I've
thought
burned too many
well.
Just yet.
Yeah, well, listen, you're an island. You're an island.
I've singed a few.
So listen, well, the plan is to reflect on where we are in the world of golf at the moment and to explain the new handicapping system, which we've had plenty of people tweet us about. So Fionn has spent his morning deep diving into all that. Where we are last week, Martin Laird won just about. Tyrrell Hatton won at Wentworth. Shane Lowry's challenge wilted over the weekend. And Kim Si-young from South Korea won the Women's PGA Championship by 5 strokes in Pennsylvania. Do we want to start with a general chit-chat on the world of golf, or will we get stuck into handicapping system?
Well, I have to mention Martin Laird, his bunker shot. Did anybody see this bunker shot that he hit? Like, just when your name is on the trophy, your name is on the trophy. It was just ridiculous.
If people didn't see it, it was a total fried egg job, and it was right against the lip of the bunker. And he was unlucky because it was a par 5 and he'd gone for it in 2. And you're talking inches is the difference between eagle putt. And ultimately, he holds this bunker shot. I meant to ask you, how do you play that? Is that just dig the blade in? You're not playing that with bounds, are you?
No. You close the club face and you try and, you know, as steep as you possibly can, not on top of the ball, but behind the ball. So you're trying to create kind of an explosion that gets the ball out rather than actually hitting the ball at all.
Yeah. He wouldn't.
You're a good bunker player, Peter.
Yeah, I wasn't bad actually, yeah. I used to kind of corner one of the lads, what's his name? It's gone right in my head, Australian, Brett Rumford, every so often on the range. And I'd say, come on, Brett, give me a bunker lesson here. because he was the best. He was the best bunker player I'd ever seen. He could spin it left to right, right to left. He could get it to release. He could do everything with the ball out of a bunker. And he was very, very technical, but in his explanation of how to do it. But once you cornered him, the next month or so, your up and downs out of bunkers would be have improved dramatically. And then you'd forget what he told you, and you'd have to go back to him and go, right, Brett, what's going on here now?
I played in the Pro-Am for the Irish Open at Carton House with Brett Rumford. And what was interesting, one is that, as you said, like his short game was just unbelievable. But how technical the relationship between he and his caddy was, the amount of numbers that they would ask for, it was brilliant to watch. And he's a very nice guy.
Really nice guy.
Had him on the show, didn't we?
Did you?
Remember, he came. We did the live show up in Port Stewart, and he came in on the Friday night. We had all our Golf Weekly listeners there, and Brett Rumford came on stage, and we had a lovely chat. Memorable, as Joe nods along.
That's amazing that you say you got a tip, Peter, even as a pro, and it's good for a month, and then you forget what you were doing or what he told you. Like, we all do that. That's one of the weirdest things about golf. You're shown something, you're like, oh, okay, I've got it now. And then you forget it. Why does that bloody happen?
I think you get very comfortable and it becomes kind of second nature. And then you might hit one bad shot and you go, well, what went wrong there? And then you can't realize what went wrong. And then you go, okay, well, what did he tell me a month ago? And you think, no, that wasn't it. Was it weight on my heels? Was it weight in the, you know, and you just have to go back and go, rather stupidly, I didn't write it down. So I would advise anybody who gets a lesson, just take a little notebook and go, right, he said do X, Y, and Z. And if that works for you, then circle it and go, right, I can go back to that if it works.
How does that come about, that conversation between you and Brett Rumford? Because you see it all the time where, you know, Tiger's talking to Steve Stricker on the greens, and there seems to be a willingness of players to talk to their rivals and give them those tips. Do you just approach Brett Rumford? Does somebody introduce you? Or is there of people looking for a bit of advice? Is he putting on a click in the evening?
I think, I wouldn't call yourself smart, but the people who are kind of clued in would go, right, who's the best at this? And like, right, let's go talk to them. And when you're really good at something, you have no problem transferring that knowledge to somebody else because you're passionate about it. He was always passionate about the short game. His long game was average as a professional, but his short game was world class. Himself and Pete Cowan used to have, if you ever got the two of them together, it was like two astronauts or two scientists talking a language that I had no clue what they were talking about. But you'd get them to play the shot and then you could see the difference. Either hitting it out of rough that is, you know, ankle deep and they get the ball to come out really soft, or out of a bunker of a downslope to a really, really tight flag. They were, you know, he was able to do all this. So you just go to them and you go, right, show me how you do it right now. How, you know, have a look at me hitting one or two shots and then give me your opinion. So that's the way he did it.
And would anybody say to you, you must be joking, why would I help you?
No, never, ever.
Who else did you go to?
Brett Rumford would have been probably one of the few, just on short game wise. Bunker play was never a brilliant bunker player. You'd look at your stats and you go, right, I'm only getting up and down 50% of the time. I was a very good chipper. But bunkers used to kind of scare me. Well, I wouldn't say scare me a little bit, but my up and downs weren't as good as they should have been.
Well, Tyrrell Hatton won at Wentworth. Let's jump in there. So that was Martin Laird. He did his thing out of the bunker. He had a bit of a wobble at the end, but it's a nice win for Martin Laird. And he had surgery recently. That's three PGA Tour wins for him. Tyrrell Hatton's an interesting case. Shot a 67, held off Victor Perez. I distinctly remember Nathan at La Hinch last year. Feels like a decade ago now, last year. We were in the midst of getting sunburnt following Ian Poulter Padraig Carrington and Tyrrell Hatton. And on two occasions, and one in particular, he missed a putt from whatever, 8-9 feet. And just in a way that was not great, when, you know, stood up and went, "You're kidding me. What a joke. What a joke." And start, you know, pointing to it with his caddy. And he's still doing that. And I can't quite warm to him as a result. He is a man who just has giant tantrums on the golf course.
Yeah, it was interesting that day as well, because Harrington and Poulter were getting on so well. And I'm not sure if either of them were playing particularly good golf, but on every tee box, there was good chat. All the caddies were getting on, and Hatton was sort of removed from that. And I'm always wary, we're watching, you know, for 6 holes in the space of one season of golf. Yeah. And he might have been having a bad day. But you're right, the little temper tantrums are always there. And he, you know, people may look at us, he's acting a bit like a spoiled child. But then when John Rahm has his temper tantrums, it's passion and it's intensity. And, you know, it's that Spanish side of his game that you don't want to take out of him. So I can't remember, Peter, correct me, like, if he's ever done anything that's overstepped the boundaries massively in terms of his behavior. And by the end of the week, I felt a lot of sympathy for him, because I remember tuning in the first morning and seeing him in his little hoodie going, "That looks quite nice." not realizing that 6 hours later, it's going to be this entire shitstorm online of, "Oh my God, he's insulting everything golf should be about. What's he..." No, he looked really good. I was looking at him going, yeah, could I get away with that? Probably not, but why not? So, and he played some brilliant golf, hung right in there, particularly Saturday when Lowry drifted out of it. That final grouping of Hatton, Fitzpatrick and Lowry were almost stinking the joint out. They just couldn't get anything going. Hatton rolls in this huge eagle putt and never really looked like fading from there at all. And like, conditions were very tough. Lowry hung on in there brilliantly in the first nine. You sort of expected him to explode in the back nine, and nothing really happened. It probably summed up most by what happened on 18 on Saturday when, like, ridiculous biblical storm arrives as he's standing on the 18th fairway out of nowhere. I don't know if it's an excuse for the shot that came, like the most straightforward approach for someone like Shane Lowry. He nearly puts it, nearly chunks it straight into the water 50 yards away. And yeah, I think that sort of stalled his rhythm. But Hatton was very, very solid and is putting together a really good career right now.
No, it's true. I find with them, and Peter, you feel free to come in, I don't know if you ever played with him. I find with Rahm, and I do take the point, you know, lots of players get upset. With Rahm, there's almost a uncontrollable rage expressing itself, and I'm kind of okay with that. Whereas Hatton, there's like a moany quality to the thing, like a "woe is me, nobody misses a putt like I do from there." Ugh, and it's less likely.
Tyrrell, I think he makes it very easy for anybody to dislike him. You know, he comes out, as you would say, a little bit arrogant and also a little bit "woe is me" and "this shouldn't be happening to me because I'm better than that." What I would say is his golf game is rock solid. He's a very, very good player, but when you're looking at him as a role model for kids and stuff like that, he wouldn't be the first role model I'd pick for kids to watch. He struggles with his temper. He struggles with his temperament. I know if I acted like that with father and brother playing golf, I would have got a smack in the head and told, you know, "We're not playing with you if you're going to behave like that." And I think that's probably what he's lacked. But look, he's a very good player. Doesn't hit the ball miles. He reminds me of a Richie Ramsey type player. And, you know, something similar to that.
I was thinking that day, like Harrington, 3-time major winner, who really cares about the traditions of golf and the rules and the etiquette. I was thinking, what are you making of this as you walk off, you know, with Tyrrell doing his little strop at the hole? And, you know, Harrington missed his fair share of putts and had, you know, tough times on the greens. I never remember him reacting like that. I do remember thinking, I'd love to know what you're thinking now as you walk to the next tee box. I have a fair idea.
A lot of the time you just ignore it. A very good story happened at the Open in Carnoustie with a person I mentioned there, Richie Ramsey. He was playing with two other players, can't remember their names right now. But anyway, he misses a short putt on the green and walks off and starts hammering his putter into the bag, into his TaylorMade bag. And his playing partner comes over and goes, you know, are you okay? And Richie goes, yeah, what the effing is the problem? And he goes, well, it's my bag. So it's funny, you know, when players, you know, lose their head, sometimes they make fools of themselves.
Oh, that's brilliant.
He did chuck a, he had one club toss during the last round, Hatton. But his short game, holy moly. Wow. Mm. He is a good player.
He's with Modest Golf, by the way. Niall Horan's stable.
Niall Horan has a golf stable?
Modest Golf, yeah.
Modest Golf.
Are you only aware of this now?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, no, he has a huge... He got Hatton about 18... He had Hatton before the Irish Open in Lahinch last year. Yeah. I think Hatton had signed in a few weeks before that. So, yeah, he's the biggest star. And
hang on, Niall is Horan it a PR firm becoming
big. No, no, it's a management company. So they have any amount of sort of up-and-coming players... Yeah. Who was he following last year? Lorenzo Galli, I think maybe one of them. Last year when we were at the Irish Open, maybe Horan was following him around. They have a big management company, loads of players in the Challenge Tour.
Yeah, I had a look at it actually the other day just to see. I didn't recognize many names. Leona Maguire has joined and Tyrrell.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're the ones.
Yeah, Ian Watts runs it for them. Ian Watts used to be head of TaylorMade on the tour for quite a few years. And then when he moved on from TaylorMade, he took up the job as kind of scout, if not a organizer for Modest Golf.
You know, on the hoodie front, not that I want to get into this because, like, who cares? But are ye on the European Tour, Peter, given a list of things you can and can't wear?
No, you are given a list of in relation to logos, sizes and stuff like that.
Okay.
But you're not. I would say you're not allowed to bring the sport into disrepute in what you would wear. So, like, the lads have to wear trousers playing golf and not shorts, you know, to a point, and then they transfer that to you're allowed to wear shorts on, you know, practice days.
Yeah.
So, those kind of stuff.
We are live, Joe, on YouTube, and YouTube is, as we know, from time to time, a bit of a cesspit of comments, except of course when Golf Weekly is live and all our listeners are some beautiful people. So we have a few comments.
Oh,
live,
great.
People
brilliant.
Watching right now.
Oh, cool. Okay. I forget that we're live sometimes, YouTube. Peter. You need to remember that.
I keep forgetting. Yeah, remember that. Avoid that knock on the door.
I noticed that. Yeah, that one. That one there.
Somebody called Enbo Television Network, don't click on it, says the reported quotes that got McCord into trouble, saying there are some body bags down there if that keeps going. When a ball was rolling into a water hazard at Augusta, and then joking that bikini wax is used to make Augusta National's green so slick.
Sorry, bikini wax. I said Brazilian. Yeah. Sorry.
Martin Farrell has been in touch. He's currently watching us live from Perth in Australia. Been listening to the show for well over a year. First time having a chance to watch it live. Best golf pod out there.
Oh.
And
Brett
Rumford
Brett
Rumford is from Perth. She said all loops back eventually, doesn't it? Johnny Kennedy said, I saw Australian Curtis Luck asking Shane Lowry at Winged Foot, could he record him playing out of the bunker? Shane was more nervous. He'd knife it from there. There's a bit of pressure if you're suddenly getting asked to show somebody how to do it, a fellow professional. Keep the comments coming.
Yeah, absolutely. YouTube comments are tough at the best of times, but they sounded very nice.
Did you hear... Bryson gave that interview to Sirius FM a couple of nights ago. Did you hear his he's still on about the scientist stuff. Just, you know, if Brett Rumford and Pete Cowan get all technical, this is the quote he had. You look at Einstein, you look at Newton, you look at all these big time names in the science field. There's been a lot of people that have been called crazy. Yeah, I don't know anyone ever called Newton or Einstein crazy, but let's proceed. Decades later, they're like, wow, that person was actually pretty interesting. He did a lot of amazing things. And then, just in case anyone thought that he was saying he was just like Newton or Einstein, he goes, now, I'm not saying that that's what I'm going to do, but shoot, I hope so one day. That'd be fun.
That first line is a bit Trumpish. These guys were big names.
Look, a lot of people. It's a good quote.
Wonderful things.
Doing wonderful things. Yeah.
Bryson is not playing again until Augusta. He's going off to build up some more muscle. That's the plan.
Did you see JT? Justin Thomas is looking for more speed. So he's looking to, I don't know if he's going to bulk up or whatever he's going to do, but.
No, Rory looking for a bit more speed?
Rory's looking for a bit more speed. And well, McGinley tweets, and typical McGinley, you know what I mean? Say it as it is, Paul. Say it as it is. I don't care. He knows this. He says, people really should not look for more speed and be more concentrating on their putting.
Ooh.
AKA, hello, Rory. Are you listening? McGinley's giving you some advice.
Well, on that point, so the CJ Cup. So Bryson's off. He's going to bulk up until Augusta. That's his plan. The CJ Cup is on this week. Limited field, 78 players. It's on in Shadow Creek, Vegas, a Tom Fazio design. Nathan, your good friend.
Mm.
If Shadow Creek is ringing a bell, Shadow Creek, that is where Phil versus Tiger, the match, took place. One of the great matches. Rory's there. We're on number four. Winged foot last outing. He's going to play 2 weeks in a row, Rory, this week and the Zozo Championship at Sherwood in California next week. He has a new driver shaft. And we touched on this with Gary and Peter last week, but he hit 191 mile per hour ball speed in practice. What he has said is he's not going to try and rip it off every tee, but he wants to have that extra speed in case he needs it from time to time. So it's not like he's going to abandon what he's done for the last 15 years with his swing, but he is looking just to move it a bit more. They're all just aware of Bryson. That is the reality. Like he is changing the game. So that's where Rory is.
Shadow Creek, eh? I'll tell you, the bits of golf banter have been out this week. Apparently Shadow Creek is where, when they're in Vegas, they play a little bit of relaxing golf with their mates. So there's a lot of, oh, I've played here about 10 times before, but I can't remember much about it. I'm a lot of fun when I'm switched off. There's a lot of that going on. Yeah, it's a good field, though. It's good quality. Really Shane Lowry's got over there.
I wonder why it's such a good field, lads.
Money.
Pardon me?
Money.
But isn't that why any field is good?
No, they all would have got a hefty lump sum because they would have had to go to Korea. And this tournament was meant to be in Korea, so presumably they were all signed up. So instead of going to Korea, they can just stay in America.
Vegas.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, Rory's there, Larry's there, and Brooks Koepka, that's the other bit of news, is back. World number 11 now, by the way. So basically, he's been in a bad way. He's had stem cell therapy injections in his left knee and a cortisone injection in his hip. Remember, he was getting treatment on his hip all the time. So he said, I've got my body squared away. It feels a lot better. I didn't actually know how bad I felt until I actually feel good again. It's nice to be back. I did another round of platelet-rich plasma therapy 3 weeks ago on my knee. I had a shot in my hip in Boston. He said the hip isn't a full tear, but there's definitely a small tear there. He said if cortisone doesn't work in the hip and it gets worse, it'll be surgery, hip surgery, and I'll be out for 9 months. But he said everything feels good now. It's the best I felt in a long time. Didn't realize last year how limited I was. I feel ready to go again. So that's where Brooks is. Going to be interesting to see. I mean, I don't know the nature of hip tears or what the golf swing does to it, but 9 months out, if he has to have surgery, I mean, this is unbelievably serious for Koepka. I mean, like, you wonder, will he ever get back to the way he was?
Yeah, it is pretty serious. And like, the body can't thrive on cortisone injections for any length of time. You can do it as a stopgap measure, but you can't just keep getting cortisone shots.
No, I wouldn't think so. Well, he's world number 11 now, and we'll get a look at him this week. So that is the general crack. That's where we are this week. Do we want to get into handicapping system, or is there anything else from the week?
Dustin Johnson tested positive.
Yeah.
For COVID. Tony Finau tested positive, what is it, a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
2 weeks ago.
Mm.
Like, the thing about golf is it has worked very, very well, but like during the summer when in the main the world was working quite well. You know, I didn't even here, it wasn't in the community for most of the summer. You felt pretty relaxed. I certainly don't feel relaxed now. And if the last week has taught us anything, it's that the football bubbles have been burst all over the place, not just Republic of Ireland. Like when Ronaldo tests positive, that makes everybody sit up. So now we've the world number one testing positive. I mean, it genuinely is going to be a case of how many missed the Masters due to COVID and not if.
That's right.
Did you see the quote that he was supposedly have said? Dustin Johnson's quote.
No.
The nurse tells him that he has COVID, and he goes, "What? Well, what? Is that the thing like Tom Hanks had?" That's the quote.
I don't believe that.
Not true.
That's the quote.
No way.
That's the quote. I'll send it on to you.
For legal reasons, I want to be sure.
Let's distance ourselves straight away.
Anyway, where did you read that quote?
Door is knocking again.
Where did you get that? Damien McGrain sent you that or something?
No. It's on my phone. I'll send it on to you.
Oh, it's on your phone. Oh, well then.
Oh, yeah, well then.
That's a legally binding document. No, but is he not correct? Tom Hanks did have it. It's a good reference.
Exactly.
Point.
Yeah, there you go.
I thought you were going to make a joke because this was some movie that Tom Hanks was in or something that he was...
Yeah.
Oh, no. Quickly, just going back to Augusta there. We were talking about it. I was just reading there, but briefly, that they've changed the times completely. Saturday, it's going to finish at 10 o'clock.
Irish time.
10:30, Irish time. Okay. And it'll be finished on Sunday at 7:45.
Yeah.
So you guys will still be on the radio.
Nathan, you can expect a day's annual leave request coming your way in about half an hour's time. Oh, man. Yeah. That's disappointing, isn't it? I guess just because of reasons, I presume.
Football reasons, yeah.
Oh, is it
football? Well, also, sorry, darkness as well, is it, Matt?
I would have thought it was the light, the darkness.
No, it's NFL.
Right.
So they have to be finished by certain times.
Surprised.
Yeah, of course.
I'm surprised.
Well, there's no NFL on in April.
Yeah, okay, it's not in April. Is that a CBS thing as opposed to Augusta worrying about ratings thing?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, because I was thinking Augusta is not going to worry about like, oh, we need to move it because we want to get...
No, CBS.
All right, okay.
Are you going to give us a competition, Peter? You said you were going to, you know, because your business is booming. Every day I meet somebody who's been down at Spa and they said, I had to hang around for 20 minutes to get a bay. You must be absolutely raking it in. In this time when so many people are struggling, you have somehow stumbled upon the best possible business. How did this happen?
No, I tell you what we'll do, right? So for all the Golf Weekly listeners out there, we'll pick one who is particularly very keen in improving their golf game, like Joe would be, to get down to either low handicap figures or to improve their game over the winter. So what we'll do is we'll do a initial assessment on biomechanics and we'll do a whole complete assessment for them, and we'll send it to them to their a video assessment of it. So at Golf at Spa.
Very good. How many shots improvement do you guarantee?
No guarantee. You have to put the work in.
Fair enough.
How are we doing this competition then? Tweet at Golf Weekly OTB and at what Spowell's?
Golf Spowell, I think it's called.
Golf Spowell. Yeah. Give us a question, Peter. Give us a good question.
Who won the best sports radio broadcaster?
I'm out of here.
Honest to God.
Jesus Christ.
Don't have that as the question.
I don't need this.
No, I'm only joking.
No. Last year.
I'm only joking. Last year, yeah. Who won this year's Irish Open?
Like, it was 2 weeks ago and I've gone, who was it?
Some American lad.
Yeah. That's a good point. I was literally thinking,
Jeez.
It wasn't your man, Aaron Rye. Who was it? That's a tough question now.
That's actually a tough question.
This is. Who won the Irish Open that happened 2 weeks ago? And we're all done. Who was it again? All right. Good man, Peter.
Well done, Peter. So let's get motoring. The real reason we've assembled today is that everybody's going to have a new handicap system to live with very, very soon. This is of huge concern to me. I have not been playing well recently, and therefore I worry that all my good work of last year is going to be flushed down the toilet and I'll be out to like 14 or 15 again. That is my main concern. Fionn Davenport, you're going to explain this to us as if we know nothing, because...
Right. Honest to God, I got up early this morning and I thought, well, we're going to do the World Handicap System. So I thought a little primer, I'll give myself 20 minutes. 3.5 hours later, I am wading through all this sea of information. I'm going to say without fear or prejudice that a lot of it is really unnecessarily convoluted and badly explained. Or maybe I'm just not very bright which could easily be the case. And I struggled to get to terms with some of the basic, the pillars of what this new system is going to be. But so let's proceed. So as of November 2nd, GB and I are going to come into the world of the World Handicap System, which has applied in the USA since the 80s. And indeed, as someone on Twitter told me, also in Australia and continental Europe for a good number of years. So we're the outliers and we're finally coming back into the fold. And the idea behind it is to make for a fairer handicap system for each player playing as many different courses. So rather than just have a straight handicap that you take with you, you're going to have a handicap index that is the measure of a player's ability. And you can take that to any course, and through a series of calculations that will be made for you, either by an app or will be available at each course, depending on what tee box you're going to play off, you will be then given a playing handicap, which will make for a fairer representation of your ability relative to the course that you're playing. So that's the stated aim of the World Handicap System. But the way it works is this. So your handicap index, so all of our handicaps are going to change, but I'm adding an asterisk because they mightn't change, but they're going to be subject to this new way of calculating. And so basically, it's going to be calculated based on the average of the best 8 rounds from the most recent 20 submitted rounds of golf. So any player who is a consistent player and has played or submitted or registered 20 rounds of golf, they're going to take an average of the best 8. And from that, you're going to determine your new handicap index. Now, golfers are like, oh my God, I'm going to go out. I'm going to come in. It's not going to say. In testing, and it's worth pointing out that the GUI and England Golf have been preparing for this for a number of years. And when testing the handicap system, they found that the handicap index of most players was within one stroke of their existing Kangoo handicap. So it's not really going to change over much. What is going to change, though, is the playing handicap that you bring to each course. So let me explain. How it's calculated is this, is this is where it gets all kind of complicated. Okay, let's start.
This is where it gets complicated.
Okay, so the key factors here are your handicap index, the course rating, and then the slope rating. So I've explained the handicap index. Now, the course rating is very similar to the existing standard scratch score. So it's what the course would play at for a scratch player under normal conditions, not excessively fast, not excessively poor. So, and generally that course, you know, and you know, whatever it is, it's all within a shot of 72 if that's the fixed handicap of the course. Okay, so and it depends on the tee that you play off. So for instance, on one course, for golfers who play off the blue tees, it might be 72.8, but from the white tees, the more forward tees, it might be 71.0. From the ladies' red tees, it might be 73.3. But from the championship tees, the black tees, it might be, you know, it might be whatever it is, 72.9. You know, so it's all a variation. But the key number, and so it should come as no surprise to anybody, because this is effectively what standard scratch score really is. But then you introduce slope rating. Now, slope rating is a word that we've been hearing a lot about here in this part of the world without necessarily understanding exactly what it is. And I am the first to say that. So this was developed in the 80s, basically because the USGA were observing that statistically, that they could show that no matter how hard or easy a course was, the very best golfers, the scratch golfers, will always shoot a score that was close to par. But bogey golfers, the rest of us, couldn't. There was these wild variations whether you were playing to your given handicap or not. Okay, so, and in general, the worse the golfer, the more the golfer score was likely to be affected by the difficulty of the course, which absolutely makes sense. But by way of example, I'll give you this. Take two courses. Course number one, So a dozen par golfers play the course under different weather conditions and different pin placements over and over and over again. On average, they shot 72, which gives the course its course rating of 72. So you get a dozen bogey golfers of different abilities who play the course over and over again, and their average score was 90, or classic bogey golf where you score bogey in every hole. Now, the slope is, so if you were to plot that on a graph where the vertical line goes from, say, 70 to 90, and then the horizontal line goes from par to bogey, and if you plot that line, it comes out at a slant, and that's the slope, okay? And through calculations made that have absolutely no bearing on any of us, and you don't have to care, the slope rating ranges from 55 to 155 with an average of 113 being for a bang average course. So that's why 113, you'll see it mentioned, it's used in the calculating of your playing handicap. But you don't have to worry about any of that. But it is worth pointing out how different courses can play differently for bogey golfers, okay? So let's imagine two courses, both tree lined. Okay. Now, on one course, the trees are cut back, say, 20 yards on either side of the fairways. And on the other course, the trees are left where they are, but the greens are much, much bigger. For the scratch player, they're going to play the course. And when asked at the end, which is the harder course, they're going to say the one with the smaller greens. Because statistically speaking, for the scratch player who isn't too worried about going into the trees because they can hit the ball straight, that's the course that's going to present the biggest challenge. For the bogey player, it's the other course. It's the course with the narrower fairways because you cannot guarantee a straight ball. And by the time you get to those much bigger greens, like you're already, you know, you've already had six, seven shots, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, you often hear the thing of like, oh, in golf, it's like, oh, scratch players or top players, they play a different game to the rest of us. Well, it's true. They do. They play an entirely different game. Peter plays an entirely different game to the game that you and I, Joe, would play, or Nathan. And so whereas Peter might necessarily be worried about the, you know, a long course or having to hit the ball straight, because as a pro, he knows to hit a ball relatively straight all the time, we would struggle. Mm. Now, I've got millions of notes here, by the way. So let me just go. So, and again, so if you were to plot the differences between the two courses on that same graph, the slope rating changes. So the slope rating on the harder course for the bogey golfer is higher. So let's say, for the sake of argument, it's 121. Because the slope rating has nothing to do with the scratch golfer and everything to do with the bogey golfer. It's the difficulty of the course for a bogey golfer, not for just golfers across the board. And that's the key to determining a more effective and fairer handicap system. So lots of factors are used in determining. So, for example, the last few years, the GUI, Golf England, they have been visiting every single course on both islands, and they have been determining the slope rating for each course. And that slope rating is different depending on the tees and obviously depending on the courses. And the factors that they use to determine the slope rating are things like roll, elevation, average wind. So, for example, there's more wind on a sea-based course than there is in an inland course. How many forced layups are there? How many dog legs? And then there are also 10 other obstacles that are evaluated on every single golf hole, never mind golf course. So topography, fairway, green target, recoverability and rough, bunkers, their placement, their depth, the quality of the sand, etc. How many crossing obstacles, lateral obstacles, trees, the surface of the greens. And then an interesting factor is this, the psychological factor. So there's an evaluation of the cumulative effect of the other nine obstacle factors. And so what they've done for each of these factors, they give them a numerical value. And when compiling all of this information, they determine the slope rating for each golf course and for each tee box on each golf course. So Joe, you remember a Killeen Castle, and anyone who's played Killeen Castle knows that if you're playing it off the white forward tees, it's a tough enough course. Play it off the black tees, it's an entirely different course. So why, under the existing system, should you be playing with the same handicap on the white tees as on the black tees? It makes absolutely no sense. So this new system is going to give you an adjusted handicap for the tougher tees, relative to the white tees, for instance. And so it is for every golf course in Great Britain and Ireland, and indeed for every tee box. Now, so that's the basic explanation of why or how this handicap system works. And the good news is, as I was talking to our friend Ivor, and he was saying, is that the one thing that all golfers will go is like, oh, the computer will sort it out. Well, yes, the computer will sort it out. You won't need to make any of these calculations, because when you arrive to play a competitive or a friendly round that you are going to mark, you will not be playing with your handicap index. You will be playing with your playing handicap. And that playing handicap is calculated based on course rating, slope difficulty, and your handicap index. And a calculation is made that gives you a playing handicap for that particular day. You don't have to do it. It'll be either on a chart in the clubhouse or near the first tee, or it's available on an app where you put your handicap index, the golf course you're playing, the tees you're playing, and it'll give you your playing handicap. So that's the way the system is going to work. Any questions?
Well, let's just take a minute. Let's just take a minute.
Yes.
A lot of information. Well done. Well done, by the way. That was
there is a lot going on.
I would say,
Peter, can you follow me?
Some bloody broadcasting there, Fiona, I would say. That was very well done. That was a lot of information to get across.
The good news is, do they have a catchy title for this? Or a three bullet points or something?
I have a question.
Go on.
Key question. Okay. So that all sounds like it makes a lot of sense and sounds like a positive thing. And it's just a more nuanced way of doing handicap, which is good. In my life now, if I don't hit 36 points, I get 0.1 back. And if I beat my handicap at 36 points, I'll be getting either 0.2 or 0.3, depending on my handicap, knocked off. So is it as simple as that? I mean, I understand we're going to take my 8 best scores of my last 20, and that will formulate my current handicap index. But once this thing is embedded and we're going, like when I'm playing next summer, if I play 4 rounds in a row where I don't hit my 36 points, will I get 0.1 back each day, or how does all that business work?
You won't. So the days of picking up, say, 0.1 for a bad day's golf where, you know, the wind was blowing or it was, you know, or whatever, you're tired, you're not, you're playing atypical golf based on your game, your ability. So you will no longer get 0.1, or indeed, if you kind of shoot the lights out, you're not going to get 0.3, you know, the other way either. Right. So the idea, it's twofold here. One, you can just relax and play. So this idea of like, I'm playing off 10.4. If I go to 10.5, they'll round up. So I'm playing off 11. That's all done. There's none of that. Right. Your score will only count toward your handicap index if it's one of the best 8 of your most recent 20. And that's the key to remember. So the days of, you know, having a bad day or of just like where you shoot 46 points, that's all done.
And sorry then, so, well, I understand how you would improve, therefore, if I have 8 great rounds across the summer and, you know, I come down a shot or 2 or 3. How do I go out?
Well, let's say, for instance, over the last, it's a rolling 12 months. So let's say your 8 best scores, just say for the sake of argument, just for simplicity's sake. So you shot 6 of your best scores between January and May in the first half of the year. By June of the following year, those 6 scores have now fallen out of your best 8. So your best 8 will be made up of literally the best 8 that you've done from June to the following June. And if you're playing particularly poorly consistently, your best 8 is inevitably going to drop. So it's a more steady adjustment of your handicap. But the idea behind it is that it's a reflection of your general play over the course of a prolonged period, rather than just 2 shitty weeks in a row where all of a sudden you just, you know, I mean, maybe you have an injury, you know, whatever, anything can happen. So it's the idea is to factor in your general level of play over a more consistent period.
So Fionn, this to me then states that I actually don't have to play in a competition for my handicap to be, or for my score to count towards my handicap.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. You don't. So now here's the thing. Scores will count, but you have to play according to the rules of golf and you have to declare your intent. So even if you're playing just a social round with another member or another player who has a handicap and is affiliated to Kongu or the GOI or England Golf or whatever. So you have to declare your intention to post a round before the round, and the other person has to mark it. So you have to go through like pretty much like you would in competition golf, where you keep each other's scores, or the other person has to sign off on your score. There are no gimmies. So there's a bunch of formats, like, for example, scrambles and foursomes and all mixed four balls. They do not count towards, it has to be, now, I am nearly 95% sure on this. It has to be either stroke or Stableford singles. They're sense. The only ones, either competitive or social. But in social, you can't just go, I hear you, pick, yeah, it's good. You can't go good. You have to finish out the putt.
I think it's important that you have to declare you're going to hand in that card beforehand.
Yeah.
You can all go out with your buddy and you have a red hot round and you're like, but you know, I'm going to stick that in actually and it'll help the handicap. Because like, I'm not even sure how I feel about the social card going in, because there is a pressure that comes with your Saturday comp. And you know, you're very much in a competition. The email is going out that evening with everybody's scores. I think it's a more relaxed thing to just play with your buddy on a Wednesday. I think arguably it's easier to play better. But look, at least if you're saying beforehand, I'm handing this in this card, I guess it's fair enough.
There is. It's worth also pointing out, because one of the questions that comes up is like, oh, here, you know, what's to stop, you know, bandits from all of a sudden just chucking in a load of bad scores and jacking up their handicap just so to time it for the big competition, the captain's prize, the president's or whatever. So the maximum your handicap can rise in a calendar year is 5 strokes, because when it was announced that the World Handicap System would use an average of the best 8 of your last 20, obviously savvy players were like, whoa, hang on a second there. You know, because golfers are encouraged to put in acceptable scores to count, you know. And obviously there's the fear that some golfers might be less than honest. Now, so they've introduced this, it's a suppression mechanism called a cap. Okay, so your anchor point, think of your anchor point is the best score of your 8 best. So let's say, for example, or your best handicap. So over the last 12 months, let's say for the sake of argument, your best handicap was 10.0, right? And, you know, and over the course of the year, it might have varied a little bit. But let's say, so that's your anchor number. Or let's say, sorry, because the example I have here is 12. Okay, let's just say it's 12. But let's say your best 8 scores of the 20 following that year give you a handicap index of 17. So basically, what you'll do is, this is called a soft cap. You'll get an increase of 3 strokes that bring you up to 15, and then the soft cap is applied. And it's a formula that basically is, this is where the half times the calculated handicap index minus the low handicap index plus 3, which in effect means 17 minus 15 multiplied by 1/2. So the difference between 17 and 15 is 2, multiplied by 1/2 is 1. So you're going to be playing off a handicap of 16. So that's the soft cap. And then the hard cap is just the top number of 5. So no matter, you can knock in, you can throw in, playing off 12, you can knock in 120, 25 times in a row. And for that year, your handicap will never, ever go above 17. And that is to stop any level of banditry.
That's sort of there now, in that, like, the most you can go up in a year now is 1 shot. So that's, you know, that's
right.
Kind of there anyway.
Is it?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. The most you can go out.
Out, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's an important stipulation. I mean, look, in the end, it goes back to the earlier point you're making about social rounds, okay? Like, look, golf is a self-governing sport. You know, whether you're in a competition or you're playing a social round, it relies on your fundamental honesty, because, like, in the real world, sure, you can play with complete strangers. You can put your name down for the Saturday comp and you might know the other 3. But more often than not, as regular golfers, we put our names down with people we know, people we like playing with, friends, so on and so forth. So what's to say that between you don't turn, you know, a blind eye to, like, whatever, all kinds of misdemeanors on the golf course? I'm sure it happens. Of course it happens. You know, we're human beings. We have feet of clay. So what would apply in a competition applies in a social round. All that the World Handicap System is asking, is declaring, is that in order for this handicap system to work, it's just applying the basic etiquette of competition golf to your social golf if you want that round to post and then work towards your handicap index. But in short, is that your handicap index is really just a raw number. And you will never play off that number because depending on the course you play and the slope rating of the tee boxes that you play off, it's going to be different each time. And it goes back to the earlier point, even in your home course, if you play, say, for example, in some Wednesday sectionals that I play in, we might play off the yellow tees, which are the forward tees. But on the Saturday comp, we play off the white tees, which are further back. And so as of the 2nd of November, my playing handicap will be different based on which tee box I play off. And then the other factor to bear in mind is the type of format which exists already. So for example, if you're playing different format games, you might be playing to 85% of your handicap or, you know, whatever it is. But these calculations are all be made without you having, all you need to do is show up, you've got your handicap index, you insert your handicap index based on the course, the competition, and the tee box you're going to be play off, and you'll be just given a playing handicap. But that playing handicap, it will be much, much fairer than the existing handicap system, which compared to this is far clumsier and kind of leaden footed, I think.
It is interesting, the addition of social golf. And are there any plans to change that you need to be a member of a club then to get a handicap?
Well, yeah, in order to, you have to be a member, as far as I know, Peter.
But if now you can have a handicap judged on social golf. So maybe this is a very, very rare example and most people want to be. But so I didn't renew my membership last year because I wasn't playing enough. But I have played bits of social golf over the last 3-4 months. Yeah. But obviously my scorecard, and because of that, I barely write down my score. I remember what pars and the odd birdie I have, but I'm not judging it in any way. Whereas if now that was building into a sort of overall handicap, I'd probably be approaching it slightly differently.
But in order to have a handicap, you need to have a home course.
Mm.
See, I'd say you need a GUI number, so you probably do.
You need a GUI. Yeah. You need to be, you can't just you be like, be, yeah.
You need to be a member of Golf Ireland, number one.
Yes.
Now, whether you actually have to have a home course, I'm not 1,000,000% sure on. But one of these things is to bring the nomadic golfers into the world of golf with a handicap so they can actually play in, you know, competitions around the country having a handicap. So society is an example like that. You know the way societies,
yeah.
You have a society handicap. And this is the way to kind of formalize more people. But it also will, and it should help Golf Ireland in relation to getting people in as give Golf Ireland a whole better knowledge of who's actually playing golf out there.
Well, I think it should do that as well, because so, and maybe I am a complete outlier in this, but so last year I had a membership in Powers Court, but I only, because of the way things went, and which is why I didn't renew, played I think once in Powers Court, but I'd say I played 10, 12 times in other courses, but were all casual rounds. So never did anything with them. Whereas now, actually, I'm putting together enough rounds to have a legitimate handicap.
Yeah.
I think it's a good move for golf to do that. You know, I think maybe there's a nominal fee that you can pay the GUI, so you get a GUI card, and then all your social golf can give you a decent handicap. I think, I mean, I don't know what percentage you're in. I'm sure you are in a minority, but I think there's a sizable enough group out there who probably play 10 to 15 rounds a year but aren't members of a club, who probably feel a bit embarrassed at times turning up at society days or different things, going, well, I don't really know what my handicap is. I'll just be off at, you know, 18.
I'll give myself 24.
Yeah.
Well, again, I've been off 20 for like the last 3 years because that's my handicap. But I'm not, like, I will have a good round, a bad round. I might play 3 times in a week at some stage, and by the third round, I'm actually playing decent golf.
Mm.
Yeah.
But my handicap is 20 because it's not counting at any stage.
But COVID proved, sorry for interrupting you.
No,
COVID did prove that there's a huge majority out there who were not members of clubs and who were playing social golf, wherever it may be, because they all joined as members to different golf courses.
Mm.
If you ring up any golf course now, it's a struggle to become a member because the memberships have exploded. So golf in all of this pandemic and you know the world is ending and all the rest, and which it feels like, golf has done tremendously well out of all of this.
How much golf should I be playing to justify rejoining?
Because it depends on what you're.
I'm thinking of joining out in Newlands, a few mates out there. But then I'm like, am I going to play four times a year? Or am I going to play 30 times a year?
I think what you do is you realistically say how many rounds am I going to play and divide by that number.
That's true.
But I do think tee times wasn't around even 10 years ago, was it? Certainly not 15. So like. Mm. There probably is now increasingly a cohort who play their golf via tee times or one of those other websites who golf should try to cater for.
This is what they are catering for now. But what I would say to Nathan there is I would actually go to a golf course where they have a system where you pay a small lump sum, so it could be 300, 400, 500 euros, and for that you get credits. And then for each time you play, you swipe, and that's your credit. And then you can use that credit in the pro shop or you can use it in the bar or whatever else, rather than paying out to a members type style golf course where you're not guaranteed or you're not going to play so many times. People really should think about these different golf courses that have a kind of a credit system. And then they're members of a course. Then they, you know, there's privileges to be members. You look at it there recently, most of the best golf courses in the country that we have, which would normally be full of tourists, are now crying out for Irish players to come and visit them. Now, I know we can't do it with lockdowns and stuff like that, but they have been, and they've been giving a reduced rate for a GUI handicap. Mm. So you could play the likes of Port Marnock and Port Stewart and Port Rush, Tralee, Waterville, Ballybunion, et cetera, et cetera. And these are the golf courses that, you know, needs the help of the general Irish public, but they also are wonderful to play at a cheaper rate.
Or, the other, I'm not sure you're thinking straight here, Nathan. Nathan.Murphy@offtheball.com. You use your immense celebrity status, free membership. Offers welcome via email. Nathan will look through them and we'll get back in due course.
I will. What was attracting me to there is actually I was thinking I'm getting to the stage. I need to, you know, put down some roots. And I know quite a few people who are members out there. And actually they have a deal that if you're under 40, it's a bit cheaper. And the time is running out on that, unfortunately, for me.
I know a fellow who's an honorary member out there too.
Oh, well then can he sign up people for, is there a special honorary members mates rate?
Absolutely, sure. I can find that. You're not a member. Yeah.
What? I saw your picture up there. All right.
Where are you an honorary member, Peter?
In Newlands. I grew up in Newlands, playing. Oh my god. Oh,
okay. I think one of the good corollaries of this new handicap system will be one is that it'll encourage players to post scores because, you know, at the moment is like. As Nathan pointed out, like whether you're a member of a club or not, like you can easily be a member of a club and never play a comp and just sit in your handicap for years at a time and then wonder why, oh shit, like why am I shooting like 9 over my handicap? So you're posting scores because this rolling system, you know, it keeps your 8 best of your 20 last, but over a rolling 12 months. So you're kind of, you're conditioned. I think it'll condition golfers to post more scores and not just at their home course. So because all of a sudden you'll have this more equitable playing handicap. So whether you play your home course or an away course, anywhere in the world, you can then use that playing handicap to determine a score that will then put in. So for instance, like I know I use Joe, you as an example. I know you sometimes as a member of Killeen, but you sometimes play Kilcock. Now, to the average bogey golfer, Killeen is a real challenge. It's a long, long course, whereas maybe Kilcock will offer less of a challenge. But your playing handicap will reflect that. So when you play Kilcock, your playing handicap will be lower than the one you play with at Killeen, which I think is a I don't know. I think for people who play regular golf, I think that's a much better way to do it.
It makes sense. It's less of a blunt instrument. It's taking
yes,
more.
That's exactly the word. Yeah,
could I throw one spanner in the works here?
Of course you can, because of course you will.
I always do. I completely disagree with the maximum handicap that you can receive.
Which is?
Why is that?
54.
54? Oh, sorry.
54.
Yeah, so 54
can you
is
put a
the
word
max-
in if I do go to Newlands to get me a really good handicap?
I would shoot you if you were off 54. I just think in this day and age where golf has become it's a sport that has to keep learning and keep evolving, and it has to be played quickly. Having a handicap of 54 is not going to get the game played quick enough.
Three shots per hole, man.
Oh, so as in nobody's picking up their ball, Peter?
Yes.
That's a very, actually, that's a really good point. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So that's the one spanner in the works that I see it.
But is that an issue with the world handicaps? Yeah, I guess it is. But is that just rather than the mechanics of how you're calculated handicap, but like, you know, it's just a question of capping. What is it? Didn't they have men's once upon a time or capped at 24, women's at 36?
Yeah.
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 But, and now is it both out to 54?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Because there is no both.
There is no both.
Have we had enough handicap talk?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is the number one subject on golf courses at the moment.
It is. Generally, I have found the conversation goes, oh yeah, what's happening? Not sure. That's the,
Well, now they know.
I know.
I think the honest people have a sense that their handicap will change according to the course, and then they know the computer will sort out a few other things. I have just found the bigger concern is people wondering will their handicap change dramatically because they're on a bad run or a good run.
Now, when you say people, you mean you.
I'm primarily worried for myself.
Historically, Joe, guys who are on this system. Okay, who are on the slope system would be lower handicaps than they actually should be. So if you ever play golf with an American, Australian, whatever, wherever they have the slope system, in general, they should be on a higher handicap because they're not as good as their handicap would suggest. Mm.
Right. So will that apply to all us, do you suspect? You know the way we see the American who's off six and we say he's like a 13 handicap in Ireland?
Yes, yes. So you'd be able to go out and put the chest out there and go, I'm off at single figures.
However, I will repeat again, is that under testing, the GUI in England Golf found that the new handicap index, so this new handicap we're all going to have, is generally within a shot of your existing handicap. So it's not going to change over much.
November 2nd. So people want to try and make a dent. Now is the time.
Couple of weeks. Yeah.
Very good round. All right, fellas. I think we're pretty much done. Golf Weekly with thanks to Now TV. As ever, you can stream all your sport, including the Masters, very soon. We will have a decent tournament to talk about next week. We'll see how Rory and Larry and Kepka get on, amongst other things.
Just to be clear, Joe, I haven't committed my future to any club yet. So I did have a very nice time down in Adair Manor. I really liked my time at Adair Manor, and I felt comfortable at Adair Manor. So
it was a very welcoming,
Nathan.Murphy at offtheball.com, and I think we could have a very fruitful relationship.
I thought you looked right at Adair. I did.
Was this the trip I wasn't invited on? Was it?
That's exactly the trip, Peter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of figure that one.
But okay. Peter, you could play Adair anytime you wanted, surely.
Yeah.
Can I just throw in? I forgot to say. So the two guys who are going to do, I threw in the prize, but I better mention the two guys who are going to give the prize. So it's Niels Conway and Sergio Coyle. So Niels is going to do your fitness part, and Sergio is going to do your biomechanics.
How old is Sergio?
Sergio is 30 something or other. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. I call him.
No, he's not named after Sergio Garcia.
Well, look.
No.
Yeah.
All righty. We will talk next Thursday. See you then, folks.
Thanks, folks.
OTV Sports Golf Weekly with Now TV. Stream the Premier League, Serie A, and EFL Championships live on Now TV. Your sport on your terms.